104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with a big story of the day.
C-Mac, Nate Jackson, what a day. Holy cow. Absolutely beautiful out. So we thank you for listening. I was talking to my man today who was doing the lines over at Smoky Hill. I went for a little walk out there, Nate, and the guy, he's doing the lacrosse field lines, and he's got myself a little, hey, D-Mac, as I was walking. That, like, I don't really know how I get noticed when I'm just walking across a field, but it was...
You're a pretty noticeable guy.
No, I don't... Really?
Yeah. You got a distinct look.
I don't know if anybody would pay for that. But he's such a good dude, and it was just so fun. And I always love talking to people who listen on a regular basis, and he's out, you know, doing stuff. And then I get into my old man, these kids and the garbage around here. And he's like, you know, he kind of, you know, goes with my flow on that. And, you know, so that was kind of a cool part for me today. Just a spectacular day. But I think it's a better day for Nate, the Denver Broncos brass, as the arbitration stuff that's been going on for a bit. But now Roger Goodell comes out and states it. And, Nate, this is a huge win for the Broncos Joe Ellis side of things. And I think it's a tough moment for Bill Bolin, Beth Bolin, Amy Klemmer, Beth Bolin Wallace, that side of things, who is filing the lawsuit to get rid of the trust, basically. And here's why. I think at the end of the day, I think because of this arbitration decision, this is just my opinion, I think they're going to run out the clock on the lawsuit. I think this arbitration is going to go for a little bit. I think Brittany Bolin is going to come and start working for the team. I think there'll be some sort of announcement, maybe even around this time next year, that, you know, she's going to succeed. Her dad is the next owner of the Broncos, and that the next couple years she'll be being mentored by Joe Ellis, which will give the Broncos and Joe Ellis enough time to get through the next CBA. CBAs, that's a tricky sort of deal, and she's going to need some time to just sort of get her feet wet and, you know, understand the lay of the land. And that will go for probably a couple years, and once the CBA gets done, and I would guess, Nate, there'd be another lockout. Something like that, probably. It usually is at this, with these labor deals.
Mm-hmm.
Because no side wants to just concede. But again, in this lockout, as with the last lockout, all the power's with the owners.
Yeah.
Players almost have nothing.
They have a little bit when they start playing preseason games and the owners start losing a little bit of revenue. Because that's what happened last time.
A little bit. But for the players, it's a lot of it.
Yeah.
And there's dumb players who don't save any money. And all of a sudden, they panic. There's a great 30 for 30 about the NFL strike. Did you ever see that about the replacement players?
In
like
the 80s?
With the Redskins.
Yeah.
And more or less, it was because Randy White was an idiot for the Cowboys. And he was one of the big-name guys to walk the picket line and come back. And he just needed the money.
Yeah.
He was just broke. He just didn't have the cash.
You get a lot of guys who play in the NFL who are living paycheck to paycheck. Who are excited for the new season to come around because they have bills to pay. And there's a variety of reasons why that happens. Some because they are dumb, but some because they're stretched pretty thin by family members. And some,
true,
you know, there's a lot of reasons there.
You are right. And I think some play, I mean, you only get paid during the season.
Yeah, that's right. One 17th of your paycheck every week. So those checks are really big. But then you get, you know, 40 weeks when you're getting nothing.
Pretty crazy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not until year two or three until you start to really see that in your bank account.
Right, right.
Unless you're, you know, a first-round guy.
Right. Things change. But most guys aren't first-round guys in the NFL.
Right.
There's a lot of them, but they're not most. So I think it's a big deal. I think Joe Ellis and that side is very excited about the decision.
But what is the decision, that there's going to be arbitration?
Well, the decision's kind of already happened because it just hasn't been made public until yesterday. The decision is that, you know, the NFL, with Carmen Policy, who's at a spry age of 76, Nate, Nothing like having a 76-year-old oversee, you know, your future. And the arbitration is just going to say, through the NFL, is the trust doing what they should be doing? Is the trust operating in the best interest of what Pat Bowlen wanted? And are they doing the right thing? They're arbitrating their process.
It's interesting that the NFL has the ability to kind of put their hand in these team disputes like that.
They do.
Has it always been that way?
It's always been that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Bill Bowen's side didn't want this to necessarily go to arbitration, but then there was a feeling from them that, hey, this is okay if it does. But they also wanted the trust to not get paid by the team. They lost that decision. However, they won the right for the lawsuit to continue to throw the trust out of power. But, again, in my opinion, that is going to be a lengthy process. Now, there might be a lot of documents unveiled for the first time and different things may come out and all of that sort of stuff. But at the end of the day, if the NFL says, hey, what you're doing in the process is right, and the process clearly is to put Brittany Bowlen into power, I mean, that's not even debatable anymore. I think ultimately by the time that happens, the lawsuit may still be going on, and then Brittany's just going to be named the owner. And now what? I don't think if the lawsuit is just to get rid of the trust, but the trust has already made their decision and they've moved on, then what? I don't think you can revoke the ownership at that point because the trust has already done their job and they go bye-bye. So that's how I'm perceiving it. And I've been told that, you know, there's some happy people over there. And I don't know on the other side of things how they're feeling about things right now. It just seems like the road was always going to be difficult for them in the first place, and now it seems practically impossible. And by the way, this arbitration, it's a total facade. It'll go, Carmen Policy will rule 1,000% in favor of what the Broncos have set up. There's just no doubt about it. It's not going to be some sort of, you know, unbiased process. It's going to be completely biased.
Well, what do you think is in the best interest of the team?
Such a good question. Well, I'll answer, and then I'm curious what your take is on it. I'm going to go back, and I've referred to this a million times since the Super Bowl. Bill Belichick asked about building a roster. Love the Super Bowl for Bill Belichick because it's the only time all year that he'll expound on anything. Period. You should have seen his answers down at the owners' meeting. It was like, we'll see. He's a good player. Well, I don't know. Said, I don't know. He was asked like 100 questions in like a short period of time. He said, I don't know, like 21 times.
I don't know.
I don't know. But at the Super Bowl, that one week, Bill Belichick expounds on thoughts and he treats reporters respectfully and he is reflective. And on roster building, one of the things that he said, which I'll never forget, is to every problem that you have, there's 3 or 4 possible solutions that would all work. So I thought that was very simple yet profound, meaning to whatever you're dealing with out there in your life, there probably isn't just one sort of answer. There's probably multiple ways you can approach things. So it's tricky to build a roster because, you know, you're not necessarily right. You're not necessarily wrong. Could be this, could be that. This could work with this, that could work with that. So when you say, what's the best thing for the Broncos in terms of ownership? Could be a bunch of different things, Nate. Could be just fine with Brittany Bowlen running the team and she puts the right people at the right positions. And being an NFL owner, Nate, I think is easy. I mean, come on. What are we talking about here? As long as you put the right people in the right positions. If you put the wrong people and they make just ridiculous decisions, it could be an absolute nightmare. So it could be okay if she just, because she's never going to have a lot of experience. I mean, she's barely, not even like 30 years old. I mean, you know, I mean, that's young.
But she's been around it her whole life.
Okay.
I wouldn't say she's the average 29-year-old.
No, that's fair. She's been exposed to things, and she's worked with the NFL office and been connected to the Broncos, and her dad's the owner for her whole life, obviously. So, yeah, that's a fair point. But, I mean, what's the difference between that and the six other siblings? You know, I mean, you know, you can make the argument there, and you can make the argument even stronger for the older siblings who've been around logically just a little bit longer. A lot longer, actually. I mean, like 17 years longer. But then is the team better off if it's sold? Well, Pat Bowlen's not the original owner of the Broncos. The original owner of the Broncos bought the Broncos because he wanted to fill up a stadium because he wanted to get Major League Baseball here. So he was like buying a stadium and he needed something to put in a stadium. He owned the team for 1 year and then he sold it off. And he sold it off to, oh my gosh, brain freeze here, fellas, help me out. His name's in the Ring of Fame. He owned the team for a long time. Second owner of the Broncos. Dang. Gets the better of me sometimes, Nate. I'm gonna read.
CTE.
They're looking it up. You guys are looking it up right now. Second owner of the Broncos. They'll get it in a second. People are screaming at their radio right now. Anywho, that guy, who they're going to tell me who it is in a second, owned the team for a long time. Then Edgar Kaiser bought it, and Edgar Kaiser only owned the team for like 3-4 years. But he was kind of smart, because when Pat Bowlen bought it, he said, I have right of first refusal in case you want to sell the team. Now, the reason that was smart was, hey, what if this NFL thing takes off? You know, what if this really kind of goes somewhere? I might want to get back in. I want might have buy a portion of the team or the entire team all over again. Fellas, come on. We don't have the name yet? Get out of here. Just type in owners of the Broncos. He's number two. Anyways. So could the team be Phipps, Jared Phipps? That's right. Thank you. Kevin Kissman gets the gold star. Jared Phipps. He owned the team for a long time. Not quite as long as Pat Bowlen has, but for a good 20 years or something. Kaiser then for like 3 years, and then Pat Bowlen since the year after Elway. So what, 84? Elway's actually been with the Broncos longer than Pat Bowlen's owned him. How about that one? Well, yeah. So,
but the Broncos have had by far the most success under Pat Bowlen.
Yes, definitely.
And the Broncos that we think about, the mystique, was under Pat Bowlen.
Definitely.
Yeah.
1978, the Orange Crush, that was under Phipps, but, and that was great. But yeah, I think the Elway era defined the Broncos ultimately with the Peyton Manning era, and Pat Bowlen was part of both of those. So by all, you know, by all definition, Pat Bowlen's more than deserving to be inducted into the Hall of Fame for everything that he's done. But would the team be better off if it was just sold? Well, my friend, you tell me about the San Francisco 49ers. Are they better to stay in their family, or are they better off when they were sold?
Well, they haven't been good for a while. What year were they sold?
Oh, my Lord.
They stayed in the family. It was this weird thing.
Yeah, they're sort of in a family now where...
The Yorks.
Jed York is the CEO, but... And he's in his like late 30s now.
Yeah.
And he took over when he was like 28, 29.
Yeah.
But his mom technically owns the team. So my mom's actually out there, the real owner, but she does, it's like in name only. Jed does everything with the team. This wouldn't be the case with Brittany. Brittany would be, she'd be it. There would be, at the end of the day, you know, she would be the only one.
But she would want to carry the torch. She wouldn't want to...
You sure?
I think so. I mean...
Why?
Well, she's working under Joe Ellis. He's going to teach her the ropes.
Okay.
And I think they'd want to seamlessly pass it off to her so we can
that happens.
Keep it moving.
Keep going. And now
think,
what?
Well, I think as players, consistency, you want consistency and predictability on your team.
Yeah.
And you want that with your ownership.
Yeah.
And I think an ownership in turmoil... lends to a team in turmoil.
Could, yes. And yeah, so, to make that argument.
Yeah, and so I think keeping it in the family is a good thing, and keeping things the way they have been in the past is a good thing.
Okay, now Brittany has the team for 5 years. Now what? She's 38 years old. She's owned the team for 5 years.
She's got 2 Super Bowl victories.
Sure, she's got 2 Super Bowl victories.
And everyone's happy.
She's still owning the team?
Why wouldn't she?
Bored, not what she really wants to do.
I don't think
she could make $1 billion if she sold it.
No. I mean, there's...
Well, I don't know. What are teams worth right now? 2.6 billion?
I think to her it's probably more about it's about more than the money. I think she wants to win and make her family proud and prove the naysayers wrong. I think everyone wants that.
I think you wanted to play for the 49ers because you grew up as a little kid with Joe Montana on your bedroom, and it killed you not to play for them, and you really just only wanted to play for the 49ers.
But then I grew up, and I assessed the reality around me. At some point, you got to put those little boy dreams aside.
Right.
And step out into the light.
You know, I used to talk to, like, Joel Dreesen or Mitch Unrein, you know, these Colorado guys that played for the Broncos. And I remember with Dreesen, I was like, you must be pumped to, you know, be here with the Broncos. He's like, I don't know, man. I was in Houston. I had a ranch, and I had this, and I had that. And,
yeah.
And I talked to Mitch. He goes, yeah, it's cool. But, you know, I went to college in Wyoming, and, you know, I just want to play in the NFL. And I realized that at some point playing for your hometown team is, you know, only goes so far. You know, at the end of the day, if your dream isn't really to own an NFL team and you got all the money you need, maybe you don't want to own an NFL team. Who knows? I mean,
only Brittany could tell you that.
Only Brittany could tell you that. You are correct. And you know what? In fairness to her, who knows how she's going to feel, you know, 7 years from now compared to today. Today, it may be a very exciting sort of thing and definitely want to do it. And now it's going to this arbiter who's 76 years old. And he's going to rule in favor of Joe Ellis and company, no doubt about it. And it paves the way, basically, for Brittany. Maybe. Maybe that was her dream, to own an NFL team. I don't know. Maybe. But maybe not. And I guess what I'm here to say is, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if the Broncos got sold. And it's fine if they stay in the Bolin family. Your question was, I don't know what's better off, to be honest with you. I think it could work either way, and I think it could be a disaster either way. I think there's something about a billionaire who knows how to be a billionaire that could be really special. Or you could have an idiot billionaire like Jimmy Haslam was, who owned a crap load of truck stops and more or less, you know, suffocated the Browns because he wanted to have his fingers in the pie every 5 seconds. You were a small part of that.
The Browns?
Well, I don't know if you're owned by Jimmy Haslam, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
What do you think? You think it's what's in the best interest of the Broncos?
I think you got to trust the ownership now to make the right decision about who they're going to put in charge. They only want to see the team do well. They only want to see some stability. They only want to see wins. And they only want to make you proud, D-Mac.
Me?
You.
Me?
You. So I think they're going to do what's right for the team and at large. But I was going to say something about when I started playing for the Niners. Mm-hmm. as a child, I was obsessed with the 49ers. I had Jerry Rice posters all over my wall and Joe Montana, and mm-hmm. those were my heroes.
Right.
And then I got signed to the Niners. And then the moment I walked into that facility, I looked around, and that dream, it died right there. That it's dead on the floor because it's never how you think it's going to be. And all of a sudden, okay, here I am. I'm part of this thing that was once a dream.
Mm-hmm.
And it's no longer my dream. Now it's someone else's dream.
Right.
And I'm a bit player in their dream.
I remember growing up as a kid in the suburbs of Boston, and being on the radio in Boston was the dream. And there were two big stations. WBCN was that was it for me. But there's another station, WAAF, which I like too. AAF, huh? And so I interned for my hero. Like, I got to, it's as if his name was Charles Lacordaire, and he's why I wanted to be on the radio, period. And I got to intern for him when I was 20 years old, turning 21, somewhere between junior and senior year of college. It would be as if you were on a team with Jerry Rice, which you kind of were for a short period of time, right?
Yeah. Here in Denver.
So you kind of, I mean, I was kind of in a little bit of awe every single day. But still, I was, you know, answering phones. I was doing intern sort of stuff. So it kind of went back and forth between just, you know, here I am just kind of doing a job. And I stepped back a little bit and like, wow, this is the guy, you know, here it is. Well, fast forward years and years, years later, I got offered a job by WAAF, a job in Boston. At one of my dream radio stations. I mean, there should have been no way that I, you know, wasn't taking that job, right? I mean, this is it. This was the dream. Then I was like, how much are you paying me? Huh. What's the health insurance thing? Because my wife was actually pregnant at the time. So you're going to take off $1,400 for parking? There's no public transportation, but I got to pay $1,400 to park in Copley Square? And rent is what? In this area? I got to live in the woods 40 minutes away from... I'm not living on the... And then now I got to live with my parents? And then, you know, radio station Endeavor calls up. Oh, we're going to offer you a little more. You can buy a house. It'll be great. That sort of thing. And all of a sudden, those childhood dreams sort of, they go away because you get into the real world.
Yeah.
So you've experienced it. I've experienced it. My guess is most NFL athletes had some sort of favorite team. Mm-hmm. And my guess is it doesn't really matter all that much at the end of the day.
It doesn't. Once you get there, once you step on that field, you cannot be in awe of another guy on that field.
So I don't know what Brittany Bowen's dreams may have been, Nate. Okay? But I'm just out here to say sometimes you can envision something, and then it starts happening, and it's like, maybe I want to do this, maybe I don't want to do this.
That, I mean, that's speculating as to her psychological approach to this thing,
and that's life. Really,
yeah, I guess that's what we do here, but it's hard to do that, especially in this context.
Who knows?
Yeah,
we'll see. And as fans, all we want is a good product out there, and you want the owner to care. You know, fans have been fans of teams where the owners, you know, are cheap. They don't really care. Nobody wants to really be there. I mean, that happens too.
Yeah, not here.
Not here. And I think no matter what happens. People care about the Denver Broncos, which is so awesome. You know, we're in no zero situation where somebody would be in charge of this team and would be cheap or doesn't care or would operate it in a poor fashion. Not on purpose. I mean, you know, everybody makes mistakes, but they certainly wouldn't be doing it on purpose. And you cannot say the same, say, for the Chargers, who, or, you know, I don't know. There have been just crappy organizations throughout time. The Browns for a good chunk of their life. Frankly, the Patriots before the Crafts. I mean, there have been a lot of teams that just it stinks.
And the players who come here know that. They know how good they have it here. Every single player who plays in Denver has had a good experience here pretty much. And when I used to play here and guys would come from other teams, they would sit in the locker room and be like, man, you don't know how good you have it here. And they would tell stories of other teams, and I would be like, wow, that really sucks. But I had no frame of reference until I actually left and went to Cleveland.
Oh!
For 7 days. And I saw how bad it did suck there. They were very miserable people. They didn't like being there.
I remember I took a job in Washington, D.C. because it paid me more money and I had been unemployed. And I probably shouldn't have taken it in the first place, but they offer the most money, and I get in there, and on the second day, this guy's in the production room doing a commercial, and I'm like, hey, you know, John, whatever his name was, you know? He goes, this place is awful, man.
He's like, why are you smiling?
Like, this place is, I mean, it's just terrible. Okay, I'll see you later. I was like, oh, my God.
There was a little bit of that in San Francisco when I was there.
I believe it.
And then I got here, it was like, wow. Because there was still that residue of the Super Bowl victories.
Yeah.
And there were those veterans in the locker room who had been to those Super Bowls. And we felt it. And Mike Shanahan, you know, ran the organization to remind us that that was the goal.
Well, hopefully that's where it gets back to. And a key figure for that may be Jake Butt. Jake will join us next.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Keenan with time, throwing going across the middle. It's Jake Butt, the tight end, and he fights his way to the 45-yard line. That's another first down, a minute 10, and the clock is ticking.
Jake Butt joins us. It's DMAC with Nate Jackson. Jake, thank you for being on. How are you today?
Of course, man. Doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. By the way, congratulations on surviving the cheerleader competition. How did that go for you? The criteria, the fallout, the decision making. How was that process for you, Jake?
It was great. It was everything I could have dreamed of. The girls, beautiful. They did a great job, but I didn't know what I was looking for. But I did see a lot of passion, and that's really what I was grading on. I wanted to see passion. I wanted to see preparation, and the girls did a good job. So, congrats to the 26 that did make the team.
Jake, how is your rehab going?
Rehab's going great. You know, I feel really good about where I'm at. I know the trainers do too. So everything's going good. You know, I'm about 5.5 months out right now, right where I need to be, maybe even a little bit ahead of schedule. So But, you know, with that being said, I know we're not rushing. The goal is still to just be, you know, 100% going into training camp and then, you know, trying to fight for a spot to make this team.
Jake, Nate Jackson here. A lot of people hear rehab and they don't really know what that means. Tell us what a typical day of rehab looks like for you.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's different. You know, initially it was quite slow. I had a meniscus repair as well, so that really limited my rehab early on. I was on crutches for a while. But honestly, now it's I'm pretty much full go in terms of, you know, I'm in the weight room working with Lauren Landau and, you know, really just working on strength and explosiveness. And, you know, I'm starting to run and cut again now, so we're just kind of working on those details and continuing to, you know, build back and try to get me back to, you know, the level of speed, explosiveness, and strength that I had, you know, coming into the last season.
And a lot of core work, right?
A lot of core work, yeah. Got to have the abs.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah. Yep. So, tight end position, people don't really understand that you have to know everything. You got to know the run game. You got to know the pass game, pass blocking. And there's so many different elements to it that each offseason you start to add little elements to your game. What element of your game are you working on, especially this offseason, to improve your game?
Well, to be honest, for me, it's, I know we just talked about it. For me, it's just getting healthy. I know that once I get healthy, I can go out there and do what I need to do. But I know once I get on the field, it's really about blocking for me. I feel that that's the biggest area of my game that I can improve on. And, you know, you want to be a every down tight end so you can really threaten the defense. They can't just come out there and key you, okay, this guy's in the game, it's a run. This guy's in the game, it's a pass. You want to be able to threaten the defense in both aspects. So, for me, I know the biggest area I can improve in is my run blocking and pass blocking.
Jake Butt always gets hurt. That must kill you to hear over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. When you do hear comments like that, what is your thought process and what would you like to get out there to people who think that?
You know, it does. It stings. You know, for really my whole entire life going into college, I never missed a game for injury. What I really pride myself in is my availability and my durability. You know, I was able to take shots, get up, and keep playing. And even through college, I only missed one game for injury. So I really took pride in that. So when I do hear these things, it's actually very motivating. And kind of just a little fact here is when they went in and did my surgery last time, there's a notch where your ACL attaches. And the tighter the notch, the more friction. And the more friction, the more likely you are to tear it. Well, the doctor that did it said I had the tightest notches he'd ever seen by a professional athlete, so much so that he called the doctor that did the original surgery on my right side, and he said the same thing. So that's a genetic thing, and it kind of put me, you know, more likely to tear my ACL, but they're able to scope those things out. They, you know, gave me a little extra room to play around with, so that kind of really gives me confidence going forward. You know, once I get this thing rehab, that what I can't control has been taken care of, and it's just about getting healthy and staying healthy at this point.
And I read that part of your surgery was shearing off a piece of your hamstring and attaching that to the ACL. Is that correct?
Yep. So, you know, this being my third one, I had two on the right, one on the left. So I used my patellar tendon on my right side for my original right one. And then when I got hit in my knee there at Michigan, I had to use my left patellar tendon. And, you know, no more patella now, so I had to use my hamstring. So hopefully this is the last time we got to deal with that. But like I said, man, I'm feeling really good. I'm really confident about how this is going. And I'm excited to, you know, get out there and start playing ball again.
Well, not to gross people out or anything, because I just had my meniscus and ACL done too.
Yeah.
They used a dead guy on me. I had like cadaver stuff.
Yeah.
So what's the difference with that and using some of your own stuff?
Yeah, so they say the patellar is the gold standard, is what they say, is that that's the best option that you can use when it comes to an ACL recovery. And normally that's because your hamstring tendon is a little bit thinner than your patella, but kind of like my notches were really tight, the doctor said that I had the thickest hamstring tendon that he'd ever seen. So, again, that's just a benefit to me, and it just means a strong new ACL and, you know, just – at this point, it's just rehabbing, you know, all that stuff. The tendon's been sealed, and it's really about getting my strength, explosion, and speed back at this point.
And do you feel any kind of absence in your hamstring after that thing got sheared off?
You know, actually, I don't. I haven't. Initially, I did have, like, most of my pain was in my hamstring, but, you know, after about a week or two, that's kind of disappeared. And at this point, I feel really, really strong and confident. I think, you know, both my legs are pretty equal, which I'd say this is probably one of the better recoveries I've had. You know, I've done it three times. So this is progressing really, really well.
Jake Budd is our guest. Jake, you keeping up with mock drafts and the draft process? Are you a draft nick at all?
No, not really. Mainly just, if anything, it's kind of looking at my guys at Michigan, seeing where they're going. You know, a couple of those guys I played with. But, you know, in terms of the Broncos, you know, I just want the best player and whatever's going to help our team win.
So if the Broncos, at the end of the day, if the Broncos draft TJ Hockenson, tight end out of Iowa at number 10, you would say?
I'd say great. You know, that's great for the team. I know he's a hell of a player. I know, you know, I've seen some speculation with him, you know, the Noah Fant. You know, so there's a good tight end class coming out this year. So, listen, I want to win at the end of the day, and I'm not afraid of competition.
Nice.
I think I truly believe that competition makes everybody better. So the more good players we can get in the tight end room, the more good players we can get in across the whole entire team, the better it's going to be for our team. And that's just going to equate to more wins, which at the end of the day, that's what this is all about.
Jake, we really appreciate your time. I hope you give my love to Emmanuel when you see him. And we really we appreciate catching up with you. And, man, we're all big fans, and we want the best. And, you know, your story inspires a lot of people. So keep it up, and let's make this the beginning of a long career here with the Broncos.
No doubt, man. Thank you, guys. I appreciate that, and thanks for having me.
No problem.
Good luck, Jake. Do your thing, man.
I like Jake Budd, and I cannot.
All right. Nice. Nice guy.
Real good guy.
And you know, everybody gets hurt in the NFL, every single person. And I had my fair share of injuries, and I got labeled that guy who couldn't stay healthy. But the question becomes, can you rehab? Can you heal? And that's going to determine whether you get back on the field and have a successful career. And it sounds like he's got the right mindset, and he's well on his way.
And, oh, man, three.
Well, not all on the same knee.
No, that's right.
And it was cool to hear him describe the notches and the kind of his biological uniqueness that made him prone to tear your
Before I had my surgery, they were like, well, there's a clamp there. And if your knee gets in this clamp, then it's going to lock. They go, if that does happen, whatever you do, don't try to, like, you know, kick it out or, you know, really just take your time with it, that sort of thing.
That happens to me sometimes. It locks and I just push it out and pop it.
Have you had an ACL?
No. The only thing that happened to my knee was an MCL.
MCL, okay.
Yeah. Now,
those kind of heal on their own, though, don't they?
They did, yeah. That was an NFL Europe.
I go in there, and my man Chad Brown was like, you probably just got an MCL. And I'm like, okay, heals on its own. And I go in, and I have the MRI, and I'm expecting the doctor to say something like that. And he comes in, and he goes, yeah, you got some problems there. You ripped this thing to shreds. And I was like, wow. And I just did not realize you can walk around without pain with a complete destroyed ACL.
Oh, yeah.
Did not know that. Thought I would be. I actually felt more pain ultimately when my meniscus finally just got ripped. That caused me pain. But I think I had been walking around with a torn ACL for actually a good chunk of time. And it was the torn meniscus that sort of, you know, was the, you know, go get some help on this.
Right. The walking around, the walking in a straight line.
No problem.
Easy on the ACL. It's the cutting.
Yeah.
It's the proprioceptive stuff. It's the reactionary stuff that you do in competition.
Sorry, I got to go get a dictionary now.
Proprioception.
Is that a real word, everybody?
Proprioception, man. All right. You stand on one foot and close your eyes and the balance that it takes to not fall, that's the proprioception of your ankle.
Yeah, I can't do that.
Yeah.
I was doing that in my rehab. Oh, that checks out, that word? Okay.
Come on, guys.
You
heard Jake talking. He knows a lot about the human body because of what he's been through.
Yeah.
So football players are actually pretty well-versed in medical terms.
It was stunning to me how I didn't have any balance when I closed my doing that type of rehab for my... It was embarrassing.
Yeah.
It was freaking embarrassing. So that being said, best of luck to Jake Butt. When we come back... I just got a quick take. We're going to get into the rule changes and all that, but I got a quick take on the cheerleading competition. Okay?
I judged a couple of those myself.
All right. Just a quick take on cheerleaders next.
You're listening to The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Mickey. Come on, everybody. Steamac with Nate Jackson. Okay, not to waste a lot of time with this, but I got to give you some thoughts about the cheerleader competition, okay? So you judged some of these, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, how'd that go for you?
It was good. It was a good experience.
Yeah. How'd you know one cheerleader was better than another?
Well, it wasn't just based on looks. It was based on a wide range of criteria.
Such as?
Well, dancing skills.
Uh-huh. Are you an expert dancing skills?
You can tell. You can tell.
You can.
Absolutely. If you if you see 100 different girls and, you know, lines of 10 and groups of 10 come out and do.
You can tell.
Yes. Some girls don't know the dance.
Uh-huh.
Some do. Some are very tight with their moves. Some are not. Uh-huh. Some, you know, it's
who cares?
What do you mean, who cares?
What does it matter?
Like any team, you want sameness and you want technicality.
Do you? Why?
Yes. Because
for what reason?
These girls are dancers.
Uh-huh.
And where are they? They're professional dancers.
Where are they dancing?
For the Denver Broncos.
Where?
On the field.
When? At halftime?
And at TV timeouts between each quarter. They go to a lot of functions.
Ah.
They entertain troops overseas.
Okay.
There's a lot of events that you don't attend that they dance at.
I would make the argument dancing is completely irrelevant to being a cheerleader.
What are you talking about? They all have to have dance backgrounds or they don't get selected.
Right, and that's the problem with cheerleaders.
Well, it's like saying, well, I think running is really irrelevant to being a football player. I mean, what's your argument here?
Because I think cheerleaders in the NFL, and in general, by the way, now this gets a little bit more serious, but there was a Real Sports story about this. In England, they would have darts, very popular on TV. So there were like dart girls. They would just walk up with the guys. They were like eye candy as the guys walked up. But at the end of the day, they realized, well, what are we doing here? We're just objectifying women. It doesn't really make any sense. We don't really need the dart girls anymore. So they got rid of the dart girls.
Yeah.
Not all teams have cheerleaders in the NFL.
That's correct.
In fact, what, the Steelers and the Patriots, I think, they used to not have cheerleaders. I don't know what they do now.
I don't think the Packers do.
Packers, maybe that's it, right. Yeah. And then they said, well, some of the problems with the cheerleaders is they're not really paid by the team. They have terrible benefits.
Yeah.
They're asked to do all this stuff.
That's
and
correct.
It's just, they're actually kind of, you know, being used. And it's all for, like, taking a trip down to Mexico to take all your clothes off make a calendar.
I think that's a little bit of a trite way of explaining
it. Where's the dancing during the calendar shoot?
Why would you dance during a photography shoot still?
You wouldn't. My point is with the cheerleaders. I'm watching the tryouts, and they all look good. I couldn't. Maybe you could tell one person from another, but really, could you really tell from the 25th best person to the 35th?
I mean, that's where it becomes difficult to narrow down. And just like an NFL roster, that bottom of the roster is hard to pick.
How are you judging it? Like, how do you tell this girl's, boy, you were so close, but,
so it's not just dancing, it's not just looks. They actually have to know a lot about the team.
Why?
Because they go to these events and they're asked questions by fans. They have to know the players.
Really?
Yes. So they would come into the room, we're all sitting there, and they would be asked questions about the team. Actually, a lot of pretty difficult questions about football philosophy, about what penalties mean, and what
Nate,
like that.
Can we stop with this cheerleader stuff these days in this generation that we live in?
I think you should ask the cheerleaders themselves if they feel used.
It's a good question, and they probably really enjoy it, and I'm sure they would stick up for what they do, and they're well within their rights to do so. But here's a novel idea. If you want to be a Broncos cheerleader, or if a team wants to have cheerleaders, how about everybody who wants to be a cheerleader? Young, old, man, woman, whatever. You throw your hat into the ring, and every year there's a random draw of 30 people, and whoever those 30 people are, you're the Broncos cheerleaders for the year. And we'll hand you some pom-poms, we'll give you some clothes that don't make you look like you're about to, you know, do 10 minutes on stage 3, and you can go out there and you can root for the team.
Yeah, I guess we just have different philosophies here. I think these ladies, a lot of them have a career that they're very focused on. This is just a side thing that they do. A lot of them are in school, and they are really passionate about the Denver Broncos, man. They love the Broncos.
So would my cheerleaders. They would all love the Broncos.
But they wouldn't be able to dance.
Who cares?
All that is part of it, man.
Not really.
Yes.
No. Jumping up and down and going, yay, team.
That's
and maybe we teach them some high school cheers. You know, hey, B-R-O-N-K-O-S, Broncos. We teach him a
There's
few
no
of those.
There's no K in Broncos. So you cannot be a cheerleader.
This is
probably- So you shouldn't draw names out of a hat because you'd get people misspelling the name.
I would draw names out of a hat. I'd have guys. I'd have girls. I'd have young people. I'd have old people. I would have people who are heavy. I would have everybody. Orlando wants to yell at me about cheerleaders?
Yeah, I guarantee you he's backing me here.
Yes, Orlando. What do you want to say about cheerleaders?
Listen, I just judged a cheerleading competition this past weekend, D-Mac.
Yes.
And it is unreal, the stuff that they need to know. Literally.
What?
They had a 100-point questionnaire test that they had to get like at least an 85 on. I got a 60. I took a test.
Give us a question.
It was signals by the refs as far as what they mean.
Uh-huh.
Then they started asking how many Super Bowl appearances the Broncos had. Then they started asking about the players question, but it was hard.
Do you know how many fat nerds out there know the answers to all those questions? We can give them some pom-poms and a Broncos sweater.
They literally, D-Mac, they got to go to all these different functions, man. It's nuts. They have to know about the team. I was in Germany with them for 12 days, and I got a newfound respect for these cheerleaders because literally all of them have to be full-time employed by something else. They cannot
right.
be at
it's
home
a hobby. Fun thing to do. We could have 100 Broncos cheerleaders, like a pool of them. Just like everybody could be a Broncos cheerleader. You know, the U50 get to be here for the Browns game. U50 get to be here for the Chargers game. You know, have you guys ever been to a high school football? When was the last time you guys went to a high school football game?
Last year.
I went to a Cherry Creek game.
All right. Do those cheerleaders look like what you see out on Sundays for the Broncos?
No, but they're
fit. Not about the looks, D-Mac. You also got to have the brains.
All right, I love you, Orlando. We got to go. Thanks for the call.
Later. Thanks for letting me jump on.
Okay, thanks, Al.
It's just my take. I'm way too politically correct.
Way too. Ridiculous. You've been watching too much HBO Real Sports, man.
Maybe. Oh, I saw the whole special about how like awful cheerleader lives are.
I think it depends on team.
I mean, there was a lawsuit about like suing, you know. It's ridiculous.
There's lawsuits involving players on teams. You know, you still like.
Right, so you're not back. I'm just saying anybody.
Like, I'm not backing down, man. Not backing down. Ask the cheerleaders how they feel about it.
I want to see a fat, overweight truck driver in his late 50s out there on the sideline cheerleading for the Broncos. Why not?
Because he can't do the dance steps, man.
He'll do the best he can.
They have had guys try out.
I thought it was, why not?
It's a novelty. They give them the opportunity, but they can't learn the dance.
What about women in their 40s and 50s?
There are older women cheerleaders.
There are?
Not in the 50s, but in the 30s.
What's wrong with being in the 50s? You probably know more about the Broncos if you're in your 50s than if you do in your 20s.
They're free to try out.
Okay.
Just like you're free to try out for the Denver Bronco football team.
Where's that?
Hey, man, go knock on the door at Dove Valley.
Get a tape together?
That's right.
Yeah.
You got some tape.
We come back. The rule changes. Brandon McManus is freaking out about something, and he's got a good point. We'll get there next.